Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is April Michalski. Before I bring her on, I need to remind you that you can always get new episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms, but you're going to want to definitely check us out on Rockfin. If you get a premium account there, you're going to get access to all of our premium content. Not only that, but all of our regular content and all the premium content from every creator on Rockfin, and they have so many now. We also have our merch store up. You can get t-shirts, bags, all kinds of cool stuff. Check that out. And finally, if you're reaching that stage in life where you got some gray hairs coming in there, you're going to want to check out C60 Purple Power. It may be the most powerful antioxidant known to man. It's helped me with inflammation, energy, well-being, and you can even get C60 for your pets so your pets can feel amazing too. Click the link in the description. You get 10% off your order plus free shipping. Tonight, I want to welcome April Michalski. She is the founder and executive administrator for Lenny's Love, Inc., a nonprofit dedicated to raising suicide awareness and promoting mental health wellness through authentic conversation. She started speaking publicly about suicide and has made it her life's mission to destigmatize the subject, spread awareness, and promote mental health wellness. Currently, she has written a fictional book that is told through the lens of a little girl who is born into a bloodline of magical ancient beings that once created the world and managed all life's existence. The modern tale is one of disconnection with humanity's life purpose and deeper connection to consciousness through our soul. She is hoping to have it published in 2022. April, welcome. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us. We've been talking through email, and you sent me a few chapters of your book, and it is really great so far. I can't wait till you get it finished so I can take a look at the whole thing. And we're going to talk a little bit about what you're working on with that and some of the experiences that brought you to write your book. And I want to get basically your thoughts and insights about our hidden reality and the possible parallels between what you've written and what's really going on behind the veil of the spectrum of our vision, you could say, you know? I really want to start with a little bit more about yourself and what got you interested in these topics, and how long have you been interested?
Well, I will say that when I was very young, I'd say about 4 or 5, I was raised in a Southern Baptist family. My father was Catholic. He always called himself a recovering Catholic. And my mother was the Southern Baptist. And so I grew up very confused. I was born a week early. I ended up being born on Halloween. So being that my mother was Southern Baptist, that didn't float so well. So that's how I ended up with the name April, because it's the exact opposite of Halloween, I guess, in her mind. I was a little girl that went to Sunday school with gloves and a hat and a little purse, the whole deal. I was a child that, you know, the emoji with the girl smacking her head like this. I was a child that raised my hand in Sunday school and asked why the people of the Amazon were going to go to hell because they never seen a white person or a missionary.
Ah, rock on. Yeah.
So how would they know about Jesus?
Yeah, nice.
So I would say from a very, very early age, I questioned everything. So
that's
kind of how I got started on the.
Yep. I mean, that's very similar to me. I did not do well in school early on because I questioned a lot of that stuff. So, yeah, I definitely understand where you're coming from with that. So have you, before you really got into starting writing your book, have you had any, like, unexplained experiences in your life, anything paranormal, anything you can't really put your finger on?
A ton. So my grandmother was Native American, and she grew up in the generation. I was kind of a late child in life for my parents. So my grandmother would have been like well under 100s now. And so she kind of had the indigenous beat out of her, so to speak. They were in those schools that were basically, the indigenous people were forced to unlearn everything of their customs, and they were forced to learn Christianity. And so my grandmother was actually very gifted psychically on both sides. My other grandmother is Irish, Irish-Polish. So one grandmother encouraged this kind of exploration into kind of the unknown and questions, and the other grandmother forbid it. So I kind of grew up at that dynamic where I was pulled both ways. But from a very young child, I had a very, very difficult childhood. So for me, I always felt safe and like something was watching out for me, and I could never really explain it. And as I grew older, I don't want to say heard voices. It's not like that, but I would know what to do and not, and what not to do. You know, as a teenager, not to get in that car, or, you know, to basically just kind of navigate me through life. And there were some circumstances I honestly shouldn't have survived, but I did. I've had a lot of premonitions of death in our family. I've done remote viewing without knowing what it was. I'm very close to one of my sisters, and I found lost pets for her. I found lost wallets for her. I've, you know, and before I even realized or had any concept 25 years ago of what remote viewing was, I never even heard of it. Remember, I grew up in a very kind of Christian household, and was kind of, you know, forced to go to church up until a certain age. Even though I questioned it, I followed along. And then I couldn't help but know things that other people didn't see or understand or feel. And I always kind of felt like I was that kid on the outside looking in on life, like no other kid got me. So I was kind of a loner and bullied in school. So I would say that my whole life I've questioned everything, and my whole life up until about, that's about 15 years ago, that's when I really started to kind of wake up.
Now you said,
so
you,
it's accelerated.
You said you did some remote viewing. Could you kind of explain how that came about, and what exactly did you do that kind of triggered the remote viewing, and when did you realize that's what you were doing?
So it was about 1995 or 96. I was working in Sacramento. My sister lived in New Jersey, and she had a collie that got out, and they had, oh no, I'm sorry. She was living in Alabama, and they had just moved from New Jersey to Alabama, and their collie got out, and they couldn't find the dog anywhere. And so she called me, and she just said, "Hey, April, can you help me real quick and just focus real quick and see if you see that, you know, where our dog is?" I'm forgive me, I have 5 children, so information kind of floats in my head. I have only so much room to like store stuff, so I don't remember the dog's name. But so I closed my eyes, and I saw myself going down this road, and it was kind of gravelly, kind of dirt, but kind of mixed with like concrete too, like an old paved road, but had been worn down kind of. And then I saw like these, you know, if you like the quintessential fences around farms, were like, you know, they're like posts with like 2 pieces of wood that go that around like a farm. So I'm going down this road, and I know to make a right. And when I make a right, I make a right on a dirt road. And when I make a right on the dirt road, I see this barn, this red barn, and this old tractor that's kind of parked kind of off of the barn. And on the farmhouse, there's these 2 African-American people rocking. The man has white hair and like sky blue eyes. I just could see this, and I don't know why. And the barn was painted, but like I said, was in kind of rough shape. So kind of like the red was worn off. And the tractor I knew hadn't been used in a long time, because it kind of had weeds, like the grass was mowed around it, but not like weed whacked around it, you know, so you could see like weeds and like longer grass around it. And the dog was parked underneath that tractor, like hiding, you know, in the shade, because it was a hot summer day. And so I told my sister to tell her son, at the time he was a teenager, to get on his bike and go put posters up all up and down, because they had made like flyers up and down like the post of what do you call it, telephone poles, you know, down this part of, I had no idea. I couldn't even tell you where I am right now. But at any rate, so she did. And like a day and a half later, I get a call all excited. And she said that she got a call, and it was an elderly person, and she got the, this is before cell phones. This is before, GPS and all this. Is like, she just moved to town. So like, well, you follow this road down to the old bar and then you make a, that kind of directions, like they're locals their whole life. Sure enough, she says, April, I roll, I, she says, I pulled up and there's this tractor sitting off. It's green, like you said, with like the yellow seat and the, I guess I can remember the colors. It was like a painting kind of, it's hard to explain. And then the barn was red. And then she said, when we pulled up, there was an old couple. And she says, and the guy had like almost, he had cataracts. So his eyes were almost white and he had really white hair and he was an African-American, really an older gentleman. And sure enough, they had the dog and the dog was underneath the tractor. And I had no idea what that was. I could just see it in my mind's eye.
That's really cool. Now you said your sister approached you and kind of asked if you could do this. Did she know that you had some kind of intuitive abilities beforehand?
Yes, I have unfortunately seen deaths of people that I know and that I've been related to. The big earthquake, I think it was in 92 in San Francisco. I was living in Hawaii at the time. I saw that. I actually found a missing person, one of my daughter who's now 28. She, about 4 or 5 years ago, she was living in Portland and one of her girlfriends was into heavy drugs and went missing and I found her. Same kind of thing. I saw where she was. I felt water, a chain link fence, an old white building by an old, industrial part of town. Described where she was, what she, who she was with, what was going on, and I knew that if she hadn't been found within the next at the most 48 hours, that she wouldn't make it, and I was right. My daughter got to her and got her to the hospital and saved her. But it was, so that's been a couple of times that I've found that kind of thing where I've really tried. And again, I didn't know 5 years ago what remote viewing was really. I mean, I've only really started to discover my gifts. I've always had them, but I don't know that I could ever put a name to them or identify what they were.
Now, whenever you're talking about, you had the realization that you had these gifts, did you, at that point further pursue, I guess, strengthening them and then working on increasing your abilities?
Well, I believe that with anything that you have that you're good at, whether it's an extrasensory ability or if you're an athlete, professional athlete or a writer, you have to exercise that muscle or that part of your brain or that part of your body, and you have to practice, right? You have to be, and you have to be in a good headspace. If you're an Olympic runner, you're not going to do drugs and you're not going to drink every night and stay out and dance till 2 in the morning. You're going to be disciplined. So I had 5 children. I was a single mom for most of my life, and my focus obviously was raising my children and making sure that they were all okay. And that did actually come into handy many a times with my kids. I knew something was wrong, and it just little things like that. It's kind of hard to explain, but it did come in super handy raising them. So in the last few years, since my youngest has moved out and she's on her own now, I've really had a chance to explore myself, if that makes sense, and to accept myself. So it's taken a very long time to get here, but now I am starting to kind of really let it come into the fold, kind of so to speak. Sorry, my dogs are with me right now. So.
Oh, that's okay. They were just saying hi. Now, when did you become aware or interested in the extraterrestrial phenomenon? Was this around the same time as your awakening, or have you always kind of questioned it?
I've never told anybody this, but I guess I'm gonna tell the world the story. When I was 11, 10 or 11, my father remarried. My mom, like I said, I had a tumultuous childhood. So my mom kind of just took off one day and left me and my brother and sister alone. My father was working overseas in Saudi Arabia. So we kind of were alone for a little while in a house, in Ventura, California. And when my father came back, and back then there was a switchboard in the 70s. It wasn't like you picked up a cell phone with a sat phone and, reach somebody out in the field. So when my father came back and divorced my mother, and remarried about 2 years later, he took me and my brother, his only 2 children left, to Florida. So when I moved to Florida, I moved to this is really the name of the town. It's called Yankee Town in Florida. And I went from Ventura, California, to from a surfer girl to a population of like 300 people in Podunk, nowhere, Florida. So I saw a lot of weird things in Florida. So when I was about in eighth grade, I started doing a lot of research on UFOs. And this is when you went to a library and you checked out books and you did reading, and all my term papers and all my, anything I had to write about was always about extraterrestrial UFOs. You have to remember too, back then, like Star Wars was out recently, the first one. Okay, that's how old I am. And oh, come on, the one with Steven Spielberg, Close Encounters.
Right, yeah.
Right. So when I was about 11, 12, I started waking up. Now it's called sleep paralysis, but I started waking up and I couldn't move. I couldn't move at all. I was afraid because, like, my eyes could move around and I could look around the room, but nothing else could move. And I thought I was losing my mind. I had no idea. I mean, back then, people just didn't talk about things like this. There wasn't, you just didn't tell your friends about stuff like this. But I do remember one morning waking up. We had a really cute, like, wooden A-frame house, and I looked out the window, and off to the tree line above the power lines, it was close but yet far, if that makes sense. It was this, like, it's a cigar shape, kind of like silver kind of craft, and it almost looked like it had Christmas lights, like rolling around it. And it coincided with my sleep paralysis. And when I kind of blinked my eyes like two or three times, like I was dreaming, like wake up, April, wake up later. And I looked up, it was gone. So I just always kind of chalked that up to, like, I was dreaming and I woke up out of a bad dream maybe, and I was a little freaked out, so I couldn't move. But then, like I said, in the last few years, after kind of diving down this rabbit hole, I'm hearing all these other stories of, like, oh my God, that happened to me. Oh my God, that happened to me. So after that, when I was a kid, I used to astral project probably from the time I was about, I'm going to say 12 to like 14. And then when I started, like, boys and things like that, that all went away. Like, it was like something inside my brain just shut off. And I haven't astral projected since until about 3 weeks ago when I was in California. I had an experience where I'm at now, but it was completely different than anything I've ever done or had done to me before. And I can only describe it as pure energy. Like, it felt like something just came and grabbed my essence and just took me up. And I just shot straight up like a rocket. I mean, just straight up. And when I looked at, back down on the earth, I realized, oh crap, I'm out of my body. Like, it took the breath away from me, if that makes sense. Even though, you're not really have a breath, so to speak, but it kind of, like, surprised me. And I just felt like this really, I can't even describe this feeling, but it was like this love and this, like, this nurturing and this, like, just like wrapped around me, and like, it's okay, you're okay, you got to practice, you got to practice. And I'm like, I got to practice what? And I look down, and the earth is weird. All the continents were like this white cloud, like little clouds, but they're in the shape of the continents, like puffy white clouds. And then everything else around the earth was just as beautiful, like the shirt you have on, like that kind of a blue. And I was like, why is the earth, looking like this? And then I'm like, oh, well, I'm flying, and I'm looking around, where do I want to go, where do I want to go? So my friend lives in Florida. I was like, I'm gonna go find her in Florida. Like, no, that's what you're supposed to do, you have to practice. So that's all I kept hearing, you have to practice. So I kind of, they just, took me around, and I couldn't see anyone or any beings, but I could definitely, like, feel them. I don't remember everything they said to me. And then bam, I was back in my body. And then I jumped out again, and that lasted a few more seconds. And then bam, I was back in my body. And then the third time, in my book, I write about this place. So I don't, I can't, on, oops, on a, sorry, technical difficulties here.
No, that's okay.
I can't honestly say if this is just from my imagination or not, but the third time I went to this place, and I know it's another dimension because I'm just starting to understand the dimensional kind of multi-universe we live in, right? I'm just trying to focus on that. It's a huge concept to take into my brain. So I'm really trying to, like, understand that. So this place, it would be like, I guess, the kindred realm in my book. It would be like a mirrored image of Earth, except pure love and pure light. And in this place, I'm in this meadow, and the flowers are like neon, and there's all kinds of, life there, like animals, but animals I've never seen. It's very friendly. It's very benevolent, very, very, very embracing, very, it's like, it's, I guess if you were to describe heaven, I guess this would be heaven, except it was like, I love hiking and I love nature. So it felt like I was kind of there, like wandering around. So it was amazing. And at that moment, because I do have a lot of different projects kind of going on, and I'm trying to really focus and get a few things done for income, as we all need. And at that moment, it was like, everything's going to be okay. Don't worry about it. And bam, I was back in my body, and I haven't had one since. But it was amazing. So I don't know who they were or why, but that why they picked now, but they did. So.
That's interesting. And you mentioned your book, which I want to talk about. I want to basically just get a synopsis of your book, if you could tell us. But first, I want to hear how it was you came to start writing your book, because that's very interesting to me, because it's kind of like a channeling experience where you just got this information downloaded from a different source, right?
Kind of, and I have channeled before, unbeknownst to myself. That's a whole other story. But okay, so in 2007, I was a lender, a mortgage officer, and I knew that, and we all knew the market was going to crash. It was evident that things were going haywire. I don't know if you remember that, but it was a very
No.
bad time. And I knew I was going to lose everything at the time, because I had took some risks, and we all do in life, and I knew they weren't going to work out at that time. So I wanted to go to Greece so bad. So I bought a ticket to go to Greece, and back then it was a hard ticket. And so I had my passport and my ticket on my dining table. Well, my best friend was picking me up to take me to, I was living in New Hampshire, to take me to the airport to Logan to fly out of Boston. Now, why this is important is because I'm talking maybe a space of 8, 10 minutes. She comes in, my ticket and my passport are on the table. I grab my luggage. I talk to her for a minute. I go to get them. They're both gone. I can't find my passport anywhere, and I can't find my ticket anywhere. I end up finding my passport, never found my ticket. So I went to Logan, tried to negotiate with the airlines. That wasn't working. So I bought another ticket at the airport. Still got on the flight. Left it went for Greece it went to Greece, and my daughter worked for a Greek at the time in New Hampshire, and he had family in a little place called Veula right out of Athens. So his sister-in-law was a anthropologist and spoke like 5 languages. She was amazing. So she took me in, and I stayed there for a few days, and then I had met a guide, and he and I had been conversing for a couple years before I went to Greece. He came and picked me up. He took me all around, like Metatoria and the city of Olympia, backpacking the whole like backcountry of Greece. It was absolutely stunning. I never went to an island. I didn't really have any interest. I really wanted to see like the ancient parts of Greece. So I saw like the oldest church in Greece, where Leonidas defended the Turks off the Turks at the stand. All over Athens, of course, incredible. So I'm like the only single person I think in Greece, because everybody was a couple. But I'm in Greece, and I'm tooling around Athens, and I'm 5'9", so with heels on, I'm about 6 foot. I'm a redhead, so I'm kind of imposing. Greek people are smaller, less stature typically. So here I am, this ginormous, like white, redheaded, American. Everyone's like, "Are you Russian? Are you German?" I'm like, "No. Oh, no, American." So tooling around, and it was like my last second to last day, and I go to this little cafe. It's kind of half parked on the water, half parked on the beach, and of course everyone's coupled up. I've got my little steno pad back in the day, 'cause again, before smartphones. And I'm starting just to take notes, and kind of I like to observe what's around me when I go places. So all of a sudden I hear this, like, you need to write my story. And I'm like looking around, and everyone's looking at me, and I said, who just said that to me? And she says, no, I'm talking to you. You got to write my story. And I said, at this point, I think I'm losing my mind, right? I'm like, what's going on? She goes, you have to write my story. And I said, okay. So I just start writing, and what you see is what I wrote. The first, I think, I see 6 chapters, and they're very
Yes.
short chapters. I don't like really long chapters in books, so I write make mine small. But I just started writing, and She's kind of an infusion of me as a child and my youngest daughter as a child. I believe my youngest daughter, she would probably slap me upside the head for saying this, but I believe she's an indigo child. But at any rate, I started to write this, and I was living in New Hampshire, but I centered the book in Los Angeles, California. And I used crystals in the book, like the properties of crystals for a lot of the different scenarios and a lot of the power sources and properties that, and I had no idea what crystals did at the time. And then when I was done writing the book, because I am done with the book, I'm just going through and editing it and putting it together now. I took a crystal class and I realized like all the crystals I used were perfectly in line with the properties that those crystals have that possess. Now, like quartz storing energy, what do you call storing energy, as we have them in our watches, computers, things like that. That's part of my book. Amethyst, all these things I had no idea. And then I've come to find out that, hey, all these crystals actually have the properties that I wrote in my book, and I had no idea.
Okay, I'm gonna need to turn off my video because you're breaking up just a little bit, but everyone else should be able to still see it. Hold on, let me turn my other video on. There I am. Okay, yeah, you won't be able to see me, but everyone else will. But it'll run a lot smoother. Now, this being that started communicating with you all of a sudden. Did she give you a name, and who she was or what she was, any other details like that?
She told me she was a being of light, and her name, she wanted me to name her after a being of light, and I knew it had to start with A. So I couldn't really, to be quite honest with you, I had to like look it up, and it came out to be Aphaida, which is the giver of life in astrology.
Very interesting.
And
So, go ahead.
her last name is Star. S her last name is Star, Starr. She told me to write that down.
Now, I guess tell us a synopsis of what she told you and how long a period of time was this communication to get this book to you?
I mean, do you mean like how?
How long
So
was
the
the
initial,
communication
so the initial.
before you started, writing and everything?
Oh, immediately. I mean, once I realized that I was being talked to, so to speak, I just started writing. And the funny
So
thing
she
is,
would
I
just
love.
communicate as you wrote?
Yes. Yep. That's the first three chapters I think I wrote in a matter of like an hour and a half.
Very interesting. So, yeah, I guess go ahead and tell us what is the synopsis of this book, because it's very fascinating. And what's most interesting to me about it is some of the entities and beings and characters and locations and things that you mention could possibly be a part of our real history and reality based on some of the researchers that I've even had on my show, like Matthew LaCroix, who I consider to be a modern day Zachariah
Zachariah.
Sitchin, but actually having it right, actually getting some of these things and translations correct rather than Sitchin kind of just probably working for the CIA a little bit, but that's a whole different story. But yeah, a lot of the things you do write about could have possibly been part of history, which I find fascinating.
So, funny story about Matthew LaCroix. A year ago, right when COVID happened in May, I am kind of like a little adventurous, and I decided, hey, I don't know, the next time I'm going to see my family because I'm living in Texas, so I'm going to get my car, drive cross country somewhat, and go see my family in California. So I did, and that's right when all the riots broke out, and I couldn't leave LA for about a week because I was stuck in Ventura. And I'm driving back, and this is, by the way, when I discovered your podcast and Matthew LaCroix's as well. It was actually Sam Tripoli. It was a podcast I came upon. I was just punching in like. for some reason, ancient Sumerians. And I was like, I just kind of want to find out. I think I originally saw the first anything about ancient Sumeria and, believe this or not, ancient aliens about 5 years ago. And I said, that's pretty interesting, but I didn't think much of it, right? And then I saw ancient, as we did the Anunnaki on this like podcast thing. And I'm like, I want to check that out. So I click on it. Of course, it's Matthew LaCroix. And I'm listening to this. And so in my book, I'm making up names like the Neon Warriors, okay? The little desert people that are neon that run around, and the crow, she's a crow shapeshifter Amazon woman, okay? The Uridamai, which are the rulers of the Dominion, which reside within the kindred realm. This is my book, okay? So I'm making all these like creatures and names up, and of course I'm using like centaurs and minotaurs and mermaids and, you know, sprites and fairies and things like that. But I'm also making up a bunch of like the Uridamai. They're half lion, half human, but they kind of look like indigenous Native Americans, okay? And they are, you know, their head is like of a lion, but their body is very muscular, very toned, very, you know, I don't know how to say them, kind of hairy, but not all the way, but their face is definitely a lion with mane. And the king is named King Meridian. Think about Meridian.
Mm-hmm.
No, at the time, no idea, right? So I'm just writing this down. Right. I have no idea. I'm just writing this right in there. So I'm writing all this stuff down. And in my book, the 12 sages in my book that reside in the kindred realm, that are basically the entities that are the kind of the gatekeeper between the kindred realm and the human realm, and then the shadow divide, and they're protecting against the shadow divide, and I will explain shadow divide in a minute. They're called the Ijiji. Now I think I made that word up, because I made up Uridamai, made up King Meridian, I made up the Neon Warriors, I made up, you know, all these weird names, and I'm thinking IGIGI, that's kind of cool. I've, you know, never heard of it, right? So I'm driving from California, I'm listening to Matthew LaCroix, I'm in New Mexico, and I hear him say, oh yeah, the Anunnaki Ijiji scientists created humans. I almost ran off the road. I literally the first in Las Cruces pulled over, couldn't wait to, I had my two dogs with me, check in the hotel. I'm like, Matthew LaCroix is going to think I'm a complete lunatic, but I am going to find him on Facebook, and I'm messaging him. And I did. And he answered me. And I said, yeah. You don't know me. I'm writing this book. I've been writing it forever, it feels like, but I almost drove off the road because you just said this. And I think something's happening to me and I can't explain it. And his response was, I wonder if you're being like channel two, or if you're reliving a past life, was the two answers that we kind of went over. I think I'm being channeled, actually, is what I think now.
Yeah, that it sounds more like it. Now, I want to hear the story, but one more thing about this being who initially contacted you. Mm-hmm. Did she say if she was like one of the progenitors here, one of the Anunnaki?
I think she honestly is. I think she is the messenger. I think she's a child of light that's trying to get the message through, because I have to tell you, since I really woke up and paid attention in the last couple of years, but I mean, seriously, right before COVID, right? But since COVID, I'm a completely different person. And I don't know if you can understand this, but I have. My reception is so open now that I have so much more information coming to me that I have never heard before or saw before. And I think she was there to kind of like unlock that door for me and let me hear and see all this information, because I call her the Enlightened One. That's what she's called in my book, Ifeda. And she is the giver of life. And I think she is progenitor here. I think she is meant to help us understand like who we are as not just a species, right? As conscious beings, like we're all connected. There is no such thing as you and me. We're all one life force, and we are supposed to be here for literally for love. So one thing that we're created for, right? And we're messing it up. And so that's kind of the message she's given me. And in my book, my main character, Ifeda, you know, I don't want to do a spoiler alert, but you're going to be very sad at the end of the book. I'll just put it to you that way. but through her sacrifices, she shows, humanity what like pure love is, right? So, and she gives us the bridge to cross to connect back with our essence, which, if you're a Christian, you're going to call it your soul, but I call it our essence, that part of us that's pure energy, life and love. We're disconnected from it. And that's what my book is really about. It's this disconnection that we have. We live in a, especially in the United States, a very commercial, materialistic world, right? Everybody wants to get Botox to be 20 years younger or have a Beamer or, have the 2.5 kids with a picket fence around their, house. We've lost sight of what's really important, and it's each other. And so she's kind of like that message for us.
That's cool. Give us a brief synopsis of the book. I mean, it can be a little bit more than brief, but it's basically about a girl who's born to a bloodline of these ancient beings, right?
Right. So I want to clarify a couple things, because if anybody Googles me or does any research or wants to email me or whatever, I want to explain a few things if you don't mind.
Sure. Of course.
Okay. So I have 5 kids, like I said. 3 of my children have gone to college. 1 just graduated in 2020. I'm telling you this because at 48, I decided that I'm going to go to college. So I'm actually an American history major, and I graduate in December.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm not going to bash. My school's great. The stuff that they teach us, not so much, especially when you're educated and you understand, what's being taught.
That's
and why.
Just academia for you.
Yeah, it's truly eye-opening. So don't anyone think that, in American history, like it's 300-year history, it's like a drop in the bucket, right? It's nothing. So I've always known, I know people out there are probably gonna think I'm, lost my mind. I absolutely know Atlantis was real. And I think Aphaida honestly is somehow connected to that, because I think that the kindred realm is like a loose interpretation of what Atlantis must have been like. And so, or been. And I think that whenever that, pre-diluvian, society that existed thousands, 12,600 years ago, whenever that was, I don't know necessarily that Atlantis is gone. And I honestly can't tell you, like, this is what it's been told to me. I think it's veiled. I think it's like, what's that island off of Ireland, Lost Brazil, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Brazil? Yeah,
yeah. I think it's kind of like that, where they're still there, but they're veiled, because we've become so fractionalized as a society, and humans have just become so violent that they've basically protected themselves, but they are a part of us. And I think that's why we have such a deep connection to them. And that's why we searched for them for so many thousands of years. So my historical references, I'm to be quite frank with you, I have the least bit of interest in American history, zero interest. I have always been fascinated where does language come from? Why do we all, speak different languages? Why does China like make amazing silk and have amazing stories about flying dragons? And India, they have, I think, 333 million gods in their pantheon, in Hindu. Where do Christians come from? Where do Jews come from? Where do, Muslims come from? Like, these are questions I've always had. So that kind of history, diving deep into that, is what's really brought me to question everything that I was taught. But at the same time, this is going to sound kind of weird. Now, I've only been exploring this for a couple of years, but I've been writing my book for, I hate to say this because it makes me sound lazy, and I'm not, 14 years. So my interest or the download began a long time before I started discovering the connection between my book and the Anunnaki.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's very interesting. So tell us about the book. What can we expect? I guess start at the beginning and just give us a synopsis.
So it starts off, kind of chaotic, as because you read it, where this little girl's having a dream and she wakes up and she's got basically wounds all over her body from this dream. And the little girl has one eye that's sky blue and one eye that's emerald green. There's significance to this because one eye represents heaven or the kindred realm, and the other eye represents earth or the human realm. So she comes in a long line of beings that was destined to be born in this century, right? But she was predicted to be born a couple thousand years ago in the kindred realm. But the mother knows that one of her children are going to be the enlightened ones. So she and the father both get a tubal ligation and a vasectomy, so they can't have a baby. But she's born anyway, so she was coming no matter what. So she comes, and she's about 8, and her siblings are in their teens, and she kind of sees this family start to really kind of splinter. You know, the girl's got her own interests, the brother's got his own interests, the parents workaholics, you know, and she's very close to their grandmother, so she sees society in the same way. In other words, she is truly enlightened. She truly gets, like, your family is everything. Your nucleus of your family, you're supposed to hold that together because that is supposed to be your defense against the rest of the world, right? If nothing else fails, if all else fails, you should have your family. And her family is failing. So what she does is she signs up for this camping trip, wins this camping trip. Of course, it's completely orchestrated by the universe for this to happen. And in her camping trip, she gets lost. And when she gets lost, she goes into the kindred realm. Now, she's the first human to go into the kindred realm. And I think I put 12,000 years. I have to go back and look at that because it's been a little while, but about 12,000 years.
And that's a very significant date as well.
And I had no idea, again. So it's so weird. I don't know how to tell you this. But so when she's gone, her family, obviously, she's 8, her brother's 15, her sister's, I think, 17, Katrina and Andrew. Andrew and Lucy are the parents. And her family unites together to find her. So that's the first thing, is like this disaster or this tragedy has united them. Now they're solely focused as a family unit to find her, right? And nobody wanted to go on this camping trip, by the way, but there's a story behind that too. So she gets sucked into the kindred realm. When she goes in the kindred realm, they're pretty much waiting for her. They know what's going on. And then she's got to go basically through the kindred realm to find what's going to save both humanity. And because, so this is where it gets interesting, both humanity and the kindred realm. Now, evil, okay, there's always been a battle, yin and yang, between it, within all of us, right? You can't have darkness without light. You can't have off without on. You can't have up without down, right? So we all have this, like, balance that we always try to, like, balance out. So unfortunately for humans, we have so much fear. Is a huge negative, you know, unnecessary emotion, right? Fear, anger, lust, greed, like I said, materialism, all these things. And we've created so much, I hate to say this word, evil in our existence, that we've actually created, in my book, what's called the shadow divide. Now, if you're a Christian, you're going to relate this to hell. If and you're going to say the humans, you know, human realm is basically humans, and then the kindred is basically heaven, right? It's kind of like, if you were to think that way, I guess that would be kind of the analogy you could use. But in the shadow divide, Zephias, who is the essence of evil, okay, he's causing what I call shivers. And shivers are basically, interesting enough, earthquakes, volcanic action, weather pattern changes, all this stuff. And when the shivers happen, that is when his soldiers, foot soldiers, can come into the human realm and infect us more. And so he's causing the shivers because there's more and more violence in the world, and humans are really losing our way. And it's starting to affect the kindred realm. So the kindreds have to take action because he's never been able to cross into their realm, but their veil is weakening. Now think about what I'm saying, and just about some of the guests I've heard that you've had in the last couple of days, because I'm, or weeks that I've listened to you. We have a rift in the space-time continuum with the God particle, right? We have polarization in this country. We have weird weather patterns going on. I mean, the earth is cooking. There's so much going on right now. And I'm looking at my book and I'm like, this is like a roadmap for what's going on in the last 12 years.
Right.
It's crazy. So I guess that's the parallels that I see.
Yeah.
And then if you want to dive into a deep dive into the Anunnaki, I know, if compared to Billy Carson and Matt LaCroix probably know about 0.5% of the Anunnaki, but what I have researched and have read, and you know, read their research and listened to them, there are a lot of parallels to the Kindreds that my book to the Anunnaki creation story, for sure.
Yes, there definitely is, and I want to talk about the Anunnaki. But before we get into that, I kind of want to address the similarities. You mentioned some of the guests that I've had recently. Well, last night's guests, Nathaniel Gillis, he's a demonologist. Now, I don't agree with a lot of his theories, but he did put forth a lot of compelling points last night. And I battle with this, and I have for the past few years. Are we dealing with a physical phenomenon? Or are we dealing with a non-physical phenomenon? Is this purely interdimensional beings? Are they physical? Can they make themselves physical? Are they physical and just projecting consciousness? Or is this a mix of both? It could be, you know, it could be disincarnate consciousness that has enhanced abilities to, you know, make us see what we want. We talked about a lot of this stuff, and I want to get what your take on what these beings are. Do you think that they are physical beings that have the ability to interact with us on a different frequency plane, to where it's, you know, kind of like our consciousness interacting with each other? Or do you think that these are purely spiritual entities that may not even be physical, or maybe both? Maybe it's a mix. What do you think?
Well, if I go back to my spiritual teaching as a child, you know, I'm going to say, oh, they're spiritual, they're demons, you know, they manifest out of spirit. If you believe that life is all energy, the energy never dies, right? And we are a manifestation of energy. So when our body bag dies, right, we continue on. We don't know where, we don't know how, you know, we have theories about it, but we don't really know. I mean, I believe that there are other dimensions that we're trying to like attain. If you go into the Anunnaki story and you see Enlil and Enki, you know, you're talking about two brothers, right, that are fighting it out. One's kind of represents the serpent, right, and the other one's like the eagle. And it turns out the serpent is actually the good guy, and the eagle is actually the bad guy, and the serpent's a guy that, you know, the dude that made you, you know, made Eve eat the apple, or tempted her with the apple, you know, and Eden, and she ate, and now all humanity is kind of screwed, right? And always been the woman, right? Anyway, so you, if you think about that, and then you start listening to some of your guests, and they start breaking that down. What did the serpent give us? Gave us knowledge. Mm-hmm. What did Prometheus give us? Gave us knowledge, right? What I think has happened is that we were created. I completely think that we were spliced as hominids roaming the earth, Neanderthals, Denisovans, intermixing, we know that. I think that we were spliced with Anunnaki DNA, and maybe some other, I don't know, extraterrestrials, I have no idea. And that, because scientists, my best friend's an anthropologist, they cannot explain how we developed language and how our brain grew so fast. And if we've been on the earth same amount of time as great apes, then why are we so developed? And we have culture and language and technology, and great apes still live in the forest. Think about that. That's just common sense, right? So now you're talking about a spiritual thing. I believe that we are godlike beings that have been wiped clean in our memory, and that we're only tapping into a very small percentage of our brain. We know this, right? And if we were to be able to tap into our full brain, right, our full brain potential, we would have telekinesis, telepathy. You know, my sister and I are very telepathic together. I can't explain it, but we literally can read each other's mind. It doesn't matter where in the world we are. We're very, very synced. We're not twins. We're just very close. I have this with one of my daughters too. Very, very close. So I believe that those are things that we are programmed to not believe. Therefore, we don't develop them, because they, the deeper state, the elite, whatever you want to call this, these entities, don't want us to wake up to the universal consciousness that we're supposed to be a part of. So as long as we focus on material goods and we're focused on money and schedules and soccer and Beamer in the driveway and the 2.5 kids and the picket fence, we don't have time to really explore a spirituality, right? We just like cycle through like bees in a hive, right? And that's great because it gives them more and more and more power, right? So an answer to your question is this: I have no clue, but if you're, I would guess that we're definitely capable of interdimensional travel, because when I astral projected a few weeks ago, I was not in this dimension. I know that when we die, we don't stay in this dimension, because I see spirits almost everywhere I go. I've been a medium my entire, like since I was four. It's probably what saved my life. So I know that there are other dimensions. It's just some people are more open to it, or can hear, it's like hear, you know, can hear better or sense mm-hmm. better than other people.
Now for me, there's two huge, like two of the biggest possibilities for me. I know there could be many, many, many possibilities of what's going on in our reality and beyond. But for me, the two hugest ones that I kind of wrestle with are, first, if we're just a genetically modified hominid created species, like the original stories of the Anunnaki were to say that we were created as slaves to do their bidding, if you look at it like that, or even that we were just created as, you know, they're tinkering around with experiments. You look at some of the old original Sumerian tablets and texts, they were drinking while doing these genetic experiments, trying to put together different types of hominids with ETs. And, you know, a few of them were mistakes when they first came out, but it's okay. They were drinking, having a good old time. So we could be just this weird experiment by these beings just to see if it works. You know, if that's the case, that's kind of depressing to me, and I'm hoping that's not. Then the other one is, this is our choice to come back here. This is our choice. This whole plane of existence, this planet, whatever we're on, is a kind of like a training ground for us. It was created for humanity, and we choose to come back here to learn more about our eternal selves. And once we learn what we have to, we can move on. That's the two I wrestle with. You know, one's kind of a depressing fate, one is more hopeful to me, and I'm hoping that it's the latter. You know, what do you think?
Yes, I'm gonna touch on that for a second. And you asked me, and I didn't really answer your questions, I apologize. You asked me about demons, whether or if they're physical or energy,
right?
Think about anything you give energy to manifests, right? So I think that as our earth becomes more violent, and there's more fear, and there is more of this deafening blanket of like dis and misinformation that's put out, you know, I mean, don't even get me started on COVID, that I think that as long as people remain in that kind of a fear and they don't wake up, I think that that gives evil entities, like quote unquote demons, okay, or the manifestation of fear, which is, you know, evil. I don't know if it's an embodiment of a specific thing where it can, you know, materialize, right? But perhaps it can. But I definitely think it feeds off of us, to answer your question. And I think if something gets enough energy and gets strong enough, yes, it can materialize. I have seen full apparitions in Salem, Massachusetts, when I lived there, full apparitions up to the kneecaps. So I know the spirit can manifest. So in answer to your question, yes, I think that they're capable of doing that.
Yes. And I know there's a definite connection with all this stuff.
And now your second question was just, what do I think about
either experiment or our choice, you know, to come back here?
You know, I kind of really in the last few years have really gotten into Indian beliefs, like Hinduism a little bit. And I think it's kind of a cool belief system in that we're all responsible for our choices, right? We have to be cognizant of the decisions that we're making and where our focus is, and be responsible for ourselves, our bodies, our bodies are temples, you know, the people that we choose to hang around with, what we choose to put in our bodies, what we choose to think, how we think, who we hang around with, you know, good decisions that were, you know, are made. And when I say all this, I think that it perhaps is both. I definitely think that we were created. Do I know that the Anunnaki did it? No. But do I think we come from a single cell that like washed up in an ocean bed 4 billion years ago or 6 billion years ago and bam, there's life? No, I don't think that, because there's too much intelligence. Look at a nautilus shell. Look at an eyeball. That's not random. Those are designed, beautifully designed things in nature that just go beyond the spectrum of understanding for us.
Yeah, and the more people I talk to, the more research I do, the more I learn, it seems like there is a really profound connection with the afterlife and possibly these unseen realms or extraterrestrial realms or whatever we're dealing with. There seems to be some kind of connection there as well.
I heard recently, I was listening to one of your podcasts, and you had an experience a few months ago, right?
Last year.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So since my, I'm going to call it my awakening about 4 years ago. Since my awakening, like, I've had definitely things coming to me, but since last May, since COVID, like when it was really, you know, starting up, I mean, like I told you before, I have ramped up. So I get downloads now all the time, and not just about my book, about a lot of other things. So I don't know about you, but that seems to be picking up more intensely for me as things in the world are shifting. And I'm really, really, really bad because I don't really watch TV at all. And I hate the news. I just refuse to listen to the news. But every so often, I'll kind of turn on just to kind of listen to see what's going on, just so I kind of keep apprised of the world around me. But it's all fake and bullshit, honestly. So I try not to listen to it. But you also have to, you're in this reality, so you kind of have to pay attention.
Yeah, and I don't talk about this much on my show. I do tell my other researcher friends. I tell other contactees. I discuss it with other experiencers just to kind of get an understanding of what is going on with this myself. But yeah, last year I had my experience, but ever since then, I've had a couple of other experiences. And my intuitive abilities have also been enhanced quite a bit, to the point where it's often difficult to be in crowded places because I can sense everyone's energy, and if a lot of people are having a bad day, it's not cool. Things like that, certain things, certain, I guess you could say, manifestation, things of this nature that I don't understand what is going on, but it's definitely something to pay attention to because it's happening. I discuss with some of my other contactees and researcher friends, and that is on par with a lot of people who've had these experiences. Once they've had something in their mind kind of opens up to this stuff, and they become get more enhanced with some of the abilities that may have lied dormant for a while.
Well, I mean, I don't know so much dormant, but let's talk about the crap that we eat and and the fluoride they put in the water. And, you know, I mean, it's not rocket science to understand that they're trying to dumb us down. And why is that?
Of course, we have these amazing abilities that they're terrified of. You know, because if we all had this and we didn't need their crappy food and crappy water and crappy indoctrination.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is a frightening thing, you know, and I have five children that are all millennials and I love them all dearly. There's a couple of them that really haven't bought into the total paradigm, but a lot of them, you know, three of them have. And I'm the mom that's like, oh, I don't believe in vaccinations. I won't get the COVID vaccination. I won't use a microwave. I try not to eat processed foods. You know, when I'm traveling, sometimes it's hard not to, but you know, so I'm the hippie, you know, I'm the mom that's kind of like lost it. Right.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, that is becoming, I think more acceptable than a lot of, what used to be mainstream society behavior, because I think a lot more people now are, seeing through a lot of this, bullshit that's, you know, being the agendas that they're trying to put forth. Then the reason I think a lot more people are waking up to this, because they don't, we only see one side from the news now. We're only going to see what they want us to hear. But mm-hmm. there's so many great alternative sources where you can kind of get an idea of where people are at. And, you know, I've seen people that were just so far to the, you know, extreme left and going with these agendas and, you need to wear a mask everywhere, COVID's going to kill me, now have completely flipped because they actually took a second and paid attention to the facts and, you know, did a little research on their own and were like, hey, I'm being lied to by these people that I thought I could trust my whole life. So I have hope that this will continue and, you know, more people will come around because they're terrified of the power we have if we don't need to use their food, water, their chemicals and things of this nature. You know, they would lose everything, basically.
I have to tell you that what I've been told is that it's going to get much worse before it gets better, but it will get better. And we are in just since 2018, right? The world has completely flipped 180 degrees. I don't know if you agree with me, but I see, the climate change, people's attitudes being more aggressive, COVID obviously, right? The economy, it's like, if you were in my book, right? If you put yourself in my book, it's like the shadow divide has definitely split open the human realm, and the foot soldiers are just marching around and just feeding everybody, you know, fear and anger and, you know, all these negative emotions, you know. But we have to remember something, and I try to tell my children this and my friends that, you know, that when they come to for advice or they seek counsel, and I do readings too, and I tell people, you are responsible for yourself, and you cannot help what other people say, think, or do. Can't help what they say about you. You can't help what they, you know, you can't help what they think about you, right? You can only control your reaction to it. If you think in that term and you behave in a manner of light and love and you treat other people with that kind of respect, it is infectious, because I have really tried to employ that in my life. And even if I'm in a really bad mood and I just want to tell somebody off because I'm having a really bad day, let's say, I fight that so hard to be pleasant, because I know that when I'm like that, even if I don't feel like smiling and I smile, I get a smile back. And now, yes, that might not sound significant. It doesn't take that much to shift the paradigm of a day, an hour, a moment. And it falls in line with, you know, Lenny's Love Inc. My brother completed suicide in March of 2018. He had PTSD from our childhood, and then he was a 30-year helicopter vet in the helicopter pilot in the Army, and served 10 years in combat, and he saw some really bad stuff and knew some really bad stuff. And that's a whole other story, but my mission is to destigmatize the subject of suicide, but also have this authentic conversation of like, yes, you know, people, I've suffered from suicide ideations. I've attempted suicide once. I mean, I'm not going to lie or be ashamed of it. It happened, and it's a part of me, and I own it. But that's the attitude that you have to have in order to get better. And shoving a pill down somebody's throat and saying, take this pill, it's going to make you feel better. It treats a part of the symptom. It doesn't treat your being. You can't, a pill doesn't heal a heart. It doesn't fix a soul, right? That's where we have to go back. We got to regress to like very, 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 very far back into who we are as humans, our essence, and figure out why we are like this. Why are we angry? Why are we sad? Why are we depressed? Why do we have anxiety? And investigate that for each one of us, and understand that what I do affects you and affects my children and affects my dogs. That energy is so important to keep on a positive level. That's why sometimes when I listen to your show, it's not that it's negative, but it's hard, because I understand like all this darkness around, right? It's so hard to keep that barrier up of light, to like want to make a difference, and sometimes feeling so overwhelmed that no matter what I do or how hard I try, I'm not going to make that difference. But I know that I'm supposed to push through that and continue on with my work. And I think if we all did that, the 1%, 2%, 5%, however many people listen to your show in their town, in their communities, in their families, that's going to start to like kind of ripple out and make a, you know, make a change, make an effect in the world.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And the power of positivity is something I've really come to understand the past couple of years. You know, I mentioned manifestation in my life lately. I completely attribute that to my attitude, my positivity, and, you know, my just love, positivity, positive attitude, and the way you treat people around you. Man, that's just that alone has had such a profound effect in the changes of my life, and I can 100% attribute that to, you know, positive attitude and thinking and the way that I've treated other people. So I think you're 1,000% correct about that. Definitely.
And that's kind of what my book, Circling Back to the Kindreds, so the thing is called Kindreds, the Realization, Revelations, and the Revolution. And if you think about what we are right now in the in the life cycle of 2021, we are in realizations and revelations, right? Like, we're realizing, like, whoa, like, we're supposed to be awake beings and, like, be interconnected, and we're not doing that right now. Hello. And revelations, and I don't mean the biblical term of revelations, I mean like the, like, wow moment of, like, wow, where are we going? What's going on? And how are we going to fix this? And then the revolution. And I think the revolution is coming. And that, in the second book I've started, it's called The Children of War, The Children of Light. Or, I'm sorry, The Children of the Revolution, The Children of Light. And that's really going to focus on, I think, what's coming next.
Well, I think that's a good thing to close out on, is to talk a little bit about, what do you feel is coming next? What kind of messages have you got about our immediate future? You mentioned it's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better. What do you think that we have to look forward to in our near future? Or, well, not look forward to?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be a doomsday. I mean, I don't feel like the world's ending by any means. I do feel like as humanity, as our species, we have to take responsibility for ourselves and how we treat Gaia, right? We have to understand that the earth is a living being, and I'm not this huge naturalist person. I'm just telling you that we are killing her, and we need to make better choices as societies. I think that we've got some painful lessons financially that are coming. I think that there's going to be definitely more polarization in the United States. And this whole disclosure thing that's been happening in this last year, I think it might come to the point where our government doesn't have a choice anymore about when and where that's going to happen, that they're just going to come and they're just going to be like, we're not waiting anymore. And we're here, and this is what's going on, and you guys are about to destroy, you know, each other, and you can't do that. Sometimes I feel like I'm on a prison dimension, you know, but I don't think that. I do believe that we're here by choice, because we haven't learned these, like, life iterations or energy iterations, if you want to call it, and, you know, we cycle through again to figure this out. There's just so many theories, just so many things out there, right? Chris, it's so easy to be like, well, I'm just going to be, and I'm not knocking Christians or Jews or anybody else, okay? But it's so easy to say, hey, I'm going to be a Christian. I'm going to believe in one God and the Son of God and Mary, the woman who birthed him. And that's going to be like, I'm going to fit everything in this nice little box. And if I check off all these lists, you know, checks, then bam, I'm going right to heaven and everything's cool. But meanwhile, I'm on earth and I'm cheating on my wife, or I'm stealing from work, or I'm beating my kid at home, right? They're saying one thing and they're checking all these, like, religious box off, but they're not living their life that way.
Yep.
We have to start living our life that way. And we need to wake, excuse me, the F up.
Yes, very well said. April, that was fantastic. I can't wait for your book to come out.
Thank you.
Definitely have to have you back on to talk about it when it comes out and give it some promotion.
Oh, absolutely. And if I'm searching for a publisher, so if any of your listeners are interested, let me know.
Yeah, I may be able to help you with that as well. So we'll talk after the show. But definitely, we're going to have to talk when your book comes out. It is awesome so far, what I've read, and you have really great insights. And I can't wait to have you back on to talk about all that stuff.
Well, I would definitely look forward to it. And if anything arises, I will definitely let you know. I appreciate your time and inviting me on your show. It's a huge honor. I'm a big fan.
Well, thank you so much. And look forward to talking to you again soon. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Good night, Chris.